Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, June 23rd. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, North Coast public lands among millions at risk in Senate bill. Willits faces severe budget crunch after years without oversight. And Trump announces ceasefire between Israel and Iran. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. We start tonight's news with national news, which has real implications for the North Coast, as 250 million acres of public lands are at risk. The Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee's draft budget reconciliation includes sweeping provisions that could lead to the sale of more than 250 million acres of public lands. Critics are calling it an unprecedented move to privatize federal lands at the expense of conservation, recreation, and public input. One of the most controversial sections of the One Big Beautiful Bill mandates the sale of U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management lands across 11 western states over the next 5 years. The Secretaries of the Interior and Agriculture would be given broad discretion over which lands to sell, without requiring public input from local communities, tribal nations, or environmental stakeholders, leaving conservation groups and rural residents alarmed. In California alone, more than 14 million acres could be eligible, including large swaths here on the North Coast.
We're really concerned about it.
That was Justin Krellen, the executive director with Friends of the Lost Coast.
Pretty mind-blowing when you look at it, because it includes lands on the Lost Coast, including lands that are adjacent to King Range National Conservation Area. It includes the entirety of the Gillum Butte holding, 9,300 acres, BLM lands that are up on the South Spit and Samoa Dunes Recreation Area. It includes a major chunk of Six Rivers National Forest, as well as the BLM lands that I mentioned previously. So we're quite concerned about it and are hopeful that this is a topic that will really help rally folks to support our public lands.
Over 250 million acres of public land are eligible for sale under the proposed legislation. According to the Wilderness Society, the bill's land sale process is alarmingly fast-tracked, requiring swaths of land to be nominated within 30 days, and then every 60 days until the arbitrary acreage quota is met. All of this would occur without public hearings, debate, or community input. The organization also warns that under-resourced state and local governments could be outbid by wealthy commercial developers. Meanwhile, the legislation fails to grant sovereign tribal nations the right of first refusal, even for lands tied to their ancestral territories or sacred sites.
These are our treasured public lands, and I don't see the value of selling off something that was intended to be maintained in perpetuity for future generations. I also don't understand it when you look at the part of it would be to pay off the proposed tax cuts. And so it seems to me that, not following through with those tax cuts would be a much better way to save money versus selling off these treasured assets.
The proposed legislation benefits energy corporations, extractive industries, private developers, and interest groups pushing for the privatization of public lands. Meanwhile, critics warn that the bill comes at a cost to rural communities. Conservation groups also caution that the measure threatens long-term environmental protections and future generations.
All the more, this is why it's important for groups like Friends of the Lost Coast and other environmental organizations. I mean, there's a network of friends groups that support various public lands holdings throughout the country and particularly in the American West. And I think it's really incumbent upon those groups to stand up and support these lands.
The House passed legislation would add an estimated $2.4 trillion to the deficit over the next decade, prompting concerns among Senate Republicans, some of whom are demanding deeper cuts to Medicaid and clean energy tax credits in exchange. Others are raising alarm over a provision that would raise the national debt ceiling by $5 trillion, with the U.S. expected to hit its borrowing limit by August. At the heart of the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill are massive tax cuts that overwhelmingly benefit billionaires. When KEMA News reached out to staff at the Bureau of Land Management and U.S. Forest Service for comment, we were told they could not speak on record. This silence reflects growing concerns among federal workers, especially following public criticism and lobbying efforts by Doge billionaire Elon Musk, whose companies have sought to influence land and energy policy, leading to tighter restrictions and heightened caution among federal employees about speaking publicly. Krellen believes that the effort to liquidate vast portions of America's treasured public lands should be a bipartisan concern.
This is a really short-sighted thing to do. I recently saw a study that they did for BLM land specifically, and from an economic perspective, of every dollar that goes in to support managing BLM land, the $194 is returned in economic value. So you really can't beat the bang for the buck that these public lands offer, not to mention the ecological value that they possess. And so there's really no sense in selling off these public lands. And my hope is that this will be a rallying cry for people of all political stripes to stand up and support these lands and hopefully advocate to get the sale of them removed from the reconciliation bill.
The Wilderness Society has released an interactive map identifying BLM and USFS lands most at risk under the Senate reconciliation bill. According to the map, patches of BLM land along the North Coast are vulnerable to sale, impacting every watershed in Humboldt County.
Well, I mean, here in the Lost Coast, look around the King Range. I mean, there's a number of parcels that have been added to the King Range since the designation of the National Conservation Area, and all of those are listed. Anything that wasn't a congressionally designated national park or national monument was on this list. You know, there really is no protection for a number of these acquisitions. I mean, there's been considerable acquisitions that have happened in recent years, both as part of the 30 by 30 campaign. When you look at Gillum Butte and all the work that went into the Redwoods to the Sea corridor, all of those lands are potentially up for sale.
Areas like the Samoa Dunes Recreation Area and nearly all of the South Jetty fall within the proposed sell-off zones. But the largest concentration of eligible lands lie within the National Forest, stretching from Mendocino to Klamath.
I mean, a good chunk of the Six Rivers National Forest is listed as being proposed for sale. And so I think until you really see that and can kind of hone in on the different parcels locally, it's really hard to state just how much land is being proposed locally in addition to the entire western United States. But California, Oregon, Washington all have huge chunks being proposed for sale, Idaho as well, and throughout the American West with the exception of Montana, which has a carve-out in this current proposal. So it's, Alaska, ton of lands in Alaska. It's really mind-boggling to look at that map. So the Wilderness Society's website has it there, and I think action information too, so that people can figure out what they can do to support this effort.
The Wilderness Society describes the Senate's proposed reconciliation bill as an oil and gas industry wish list. You can find a detailed map of the proposed land sales at their website, wilderness.org. The legislation, officially titled the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, H.R. 1, passed the House on May 22nd by a narrow vote of 215 to 214. The bill includes sweeping tax policy changes and major cuts to non-defense discretionary spending, including reductions to education, healthcare, and public service programs. The Senate began considering its version of the bill today, June 23rd, with a floor vote expected by the end of this week. Due to it being a reconciliation bill, it can pass with a simple majority and is not subject to a filibuster. However, some provisions may be struck based on Senate rules. Lawmakers are aiming to send a final version to the president before the July 4th recess. Public lands advocates are urging residents, especially those in California's Sierra Nevada region, to contact their congressional representatives. Three House Republicans, Kevin Kiley, Doug LaMalfa, and Tom McClintock, are expected to play key roles in shaping or opposing the final bill. In addition to its impact on public lands, the bill has serious implications for public media outlets like KMUD, KZYX, and KEET-TV. It would eliminate future advance appropriations for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which stations rely on for multi-year planning and stability. The bill also rescinds unobligated CPB funds, posing a threat to programming and infrastructure investments. KMUD News has posted additional information and helpful links at kmud.org for those who want to learn more or take action. Turning to Mendocino, Willits faces a severe budget crunch after years without oversight. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
The city of Willits is facing a moment of financial reckoning. What began as an effort to complete a series of overdue audits has revealed a municipal budget that's teetering on the brink. According to a report provided by Finance Director Manny Orozco, during the last year, the city faced a shortfall of $4.2 million. As of last week, the general fund had dwindled to just $32,000. The question on everyone's mind was, how did things get so bad? According to Orozco, it started with a lack of leadership.
The city did not have a finance director since 2020, and the audits had not been done since 1819. Okay. The city also did not have a finance department any longer. Pretty much everyone was gone except for a student worker that was taking over the cash receiving at that particular point in time.
This led to issues with the general ledger.
And the general ledger had a lot of damage done to it because of, without a finance director, there's no leadership, nobody knowing where to actually place anything out. So for the most part, a lot of things were printed out, or a lot of checks were run out through a process called pre-issue. And usually that ran it through a payroll liability account that scrambled everything.
On top of these challenges, the city was using separate software systems for revenue and for payroll.
Additionally, payroll was also done by the ADP software system, in which they used that software instead of ACS, and the systems couldn't talk to each other. So we had no mechanism of actually applying the expenses of payroll into the actual general ledger.
Meanwhile, sales tax was falling.
What we did know at the time, the city had seen an average of a 9% drop in sales tax revenue over the past 3 years.
Heightening the budget crunch, Willits is waiting on approximately $2 million in reimbursement from sources like Rails to Trails, MCOG, Clean California, and FEMA. The money was spent on major capital improvements, including pavement preservation and water main and sewer replacement. Orozco said Willits' financial issues came to a head in the fall of 2024.
I was called back in October 24 because I believe there was an immediate cash flow issue that was detected. So after that, we noticed that we didn't have enough cash flow in order to be able to cover the costs of what we had in checks out and also in billing. We're about a week.
So our
out.
Payroll every 2 weeks is $230,000.
Yes.
Did we have cash flow that would cover the payroll?
That was Mayor Tom Allman, and here's Manny Orozco's response.
No.
The city's solution at the time was to take money from the local agency investment fund, essentially depleting it. Here's Councilmember Bruce Burton explaining the LAIF account.
The other thing that's important to understand is that people should know is that the LAIF account, which is your long-term investment accounts, put where you put money where you don't think you're going to need it for a while. It's not your first reserve cash account. That account had, in the end of 24, had $4.7 million in it. Today it has $543,000. There's something going on here that is got me very concerned.
Members of the public wanted to know if there was any criminal misappropriation of funds.
Helen Sims, is a forensic audit out of the question?
No, I don't know of a need. I know there's a very, very big expense with a forensic audit, but is that out of the question? No. If we had an indication that there was some, if I had an indication that there was misappropriations or theft, I would certainly be preaching forensic audit.
Thank you.
Allman went further. He said he did not believe the money was misappropriated.
That the money was spent on public projects or consultants that provided services to the city.
Or payroll, just staffing. I mean, basically that's
right.
What the city is staffing.
So obviously, the council's concerned about any future hires. You know, the police department's a very important part, and we want to staff the police department. But honestly, you know, when I talk to the city employees, there might be times where if somebody retires, we don't know, you know. Now, we obviously have to keep wastewater and the water treatment plant running with everything, but we're in for some tough times.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a black and white plan that says this is how we're going to get $4.2 million back? No, there's not that. That's what we're here talking about.
Allman and other council members criticized the $1.8 million spent on outside contractors, and Burton questioned the previous council's decision to draw down the investment account when they had money in a Measure K account. Measure K authorized the city to collect money from an additional 0.75% sales tax for essential services.
Well, I'm disturbed that you decided to spend $4 million of LAIF money instead of the Measure K money that was in your doggone checking account.
Burton directed his remark to Councilmember Jerry Gonzalez, who was on the previous council.
Well, I'm not going to defend that right now, other than just I think we needed more information that we weren't getting.
Orozco recommended and the council approved transferring $712,670 from Measure K funds to the general fund. The council also approved consent calendar items. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
In state news, federal court hears arguments on Trump takeover of California National Guard. Suzanne Potter reports.
A case with national implications on the power of the U.S. president to use state National Guard troops to quell protests now rests with a panel of three district court judges after a hearing on Tuesday ended without a decision. Governor Gavin Newsom wants the courts to force President Donald Trump to relinquish control of the California National Guard, which was deployed over Newsom's objections to Los Angeles following unrest over immigration raids. Attorney Brett Shumate, speaking on behalf of the Justice Department, said the court has no power to review the president's decision.
So the president has the discretion to decide what level of forces are necessary to counter the threat, necessary to repel the invasion, suppress the rebellion, or execute those laws. And in the president's judgment, 2,000 National Guard are necessary to execute the laws in California, and the record bears that out.
The governor and L.A. Mayor Karen Bass have argued that local law enforcement had the situation under control. They contend that the guard's presence only inflamed tensions and raised the risk of violence. Shumate argued the troops are essential to enforce immigration laws. Representing the state of California, Attorney Samuel Harbert told the court the law requires the president to go through the governor and denied that the protests constituted an invasion or rebellion.
It would defy our constitutional traditions of preserving state sovereignty, of providing judicial review for the legality of executive action, of safeguarding our cherished rights to political protest.
Harbert also noted the deployment in Los Angeles draws the California National Guard away from critical work at the state level, including wildfire prevention and drug interdiction. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Health advocates say Republican budget bill would devastate health in California and nationally. Scott Baba shares this report.
As President Donald Trump's big, beautiful budget bill continues to make its way through Congress, Senate Democrats called out their GOP colleagues for provisions that have emerged in the Senate version of the bill that are even more extreme than those in the initial House version. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said that GOP senators had betrayed their constituents.
Senators went home and told their constituents, oh, don't worry, this'll change, that'll change. They said they were listening to their constituents. They lied. They lied. Many of them claimed they would draw red lines on cuts to Medicaid or clean energy or food assistance. But now that we've seen the Senate Republicans' big, beautiful betrayal, we know what's in it. They didn't fix the House or improve the House bill. They made it far, far worse.
The budget plan, a centerpiece of Trump's domestic agenda, would make permanent Trump's previous 2017 tax cuts and add new tax breaks, including a $6,000 deduction for low and moderate income seniors. It retains the lowered $10,000 cap on state and local tax, or SALT, deductions, a move that drew backlash even from GOP lawmakers in high-tax states who had negotiated higher SALT deductions in the House bill. To pay for the changes, the proposal slashes green energy incentives and tightens Medicaid eligibility by requiring most adults, including parents of teens, to work 80 hours a month. A $35 copay for some Medicaid patients and a gradual rollback of provider taxes are also included. Democratic Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon called the proposal class warfare.
It is hard to believe that anybody could spend almost $3 trillion on a bill full of tax cuts and somehow increase the poverty rate in America. Senate Republicans found a way to do that too.
The Congressional Budget Office estimates the House version of the bill would add $3.4 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years and leave nearly 11 million people uninsured. During the U.S. Conference of Mayors annual meeting in Tampa, Florida, Matthew Turk, mayor of Allentown, Pennsylvania, said that the cuts proposed would have major downstream effects on local governments, even if there were no immediate hits to municipal coffers.
People who are right now precariously housed and getting the mental health care that they need, without that health care, they end up on the streets. They end up in homeless encampments, which, again, that becomes real to us. We might not see what a Medicaid by a line in our budget. We might not see a SNAP line in our budget, but we certainly see the impact there.
Senate Republicans say they hope to have a version of the bill ready to move forward by next week. I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In national news, earlier this Monday morning, the Pentagon confirmed that Iran launched a missile attack on the Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar, calling it a retaliatory but largely symbolic response to recent U.S. airstrikes. A U.S. defense official said Iran gave prior notice to both American and Qatari authorities. There are no reports of U.S. casualties. Meanwhile, the Israeli Defense Forces launched their most extensive air campaign yet on targets in and around Tehran, using over 100 munitions. Among the targets was infrastructure near the Fardo uranium enrichment facility, just one day after the U.S. dropped bunker-busting bombs on the site. Iran's judiciary claims the situation is under control and has accused Israel of violating international law. French President Emmanuel Macron called the recent escalations a spiral of chaos and urged all parties to exercise maximum restraint. Regional reactions continue to pour in. Egypt and Lebanon issued statements condemning Iran's strike on the U.S. base, while the Russian Foreign Ministry also called for an end to hostilities. However, a spokesperson for the Qatari government said that the escalation began with Israel's, quote, irresponsible practices, close quote. However, the breaking news this Monday evening is Donald Trump has announced a ceasefire between Israel and Iran. Just after 5 p.m. this evening, the president made the breaking announcement, quote, "Congratulations to everyone. It has been fully agreed by and between Israel and Iran that there will be a complete and total ceasefire. In approximately 6 hours from now, when Israel and Iran have wound down and completed their in-progress final missions, for 12 hours, at which point the war will be considered ended. God bless Israel, God bless Iran, God bless the Middle East, God bless the United States of America, and God bless the world." Close quote. According to Trump, the ceasefire will begin in 6 hours, lasting for 12 hours on each side, effectively ending what he calls the 12-day war. KMA News will continue to provide updates as the story develops. The United Security Council meetings on Ukraine, Russia, and Israel-Iran wars bring calls for peace and angry accusations. Christopher Martinez reports.
The United Nations Security Council held back-to-back meetings Friday in an attempt to deal with wars between Russia and Ukraine and between Israel and Iran. The UN representative for Iran blasted Israel's attacks as war crimes.
The lies and fabrication used by the representative of the Israeli regime and its Western allies don't work anymore to whitewash and justify its horrendous crimes. International law is clear. There is no right for Israel to commit this act of aggression, no right to attack and target civilians, civilian infrastructure, or safeguard nuclear facilities, no legal or moral cover for war crimes.
Israel's ambassador reacted with outrage.
Now, with innocent blood still dripping from your hands, you come here asking for sympathy. You demand protection from this council while plotting the extermination of my people. It's enough. Enough with the performances. Enough with the theater. How can this council allow the representative of a regime that funds, arms, and orchestrates terror across the world to come here and play victim? It's like a wolf complaining when the shepherd fights back to protect his flock.
In a separate meeting, the Security Council heard briefings on the Russia-Ukraine war. UN Assistant Secretary General Miroslav Yencha said it's critical to maintain focused attention on the need for peace in Ukraine, as he described civilian casualties in recent deadly attacks.
These levels of death and destruction risk dimming hope for an immediate ceasefire and threaten to undermine prospects for a lasting peace.
Negotiations and diplomacy continue, as does the fighting in both wars and the suffering of civilians on the ground. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres made a plea at the meeting on the Israel-Iran war, although it could apply to both conflicts.
To the parties to the conflict, the potential parties to the conflict, and to the Security Council as the representative of the international community, I have a simple and clear message. Give peace a chance.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Elise Cox, Suzanne Potter, Scott Baba, and Christopher Martinez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.